Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children 18 plus, you are tuned in to the Loan Officer Podcast with me, Dustin Owen, and my main man.
Hi, I'm just playing JC.
John Coleman.
That was good, huh?
Yeah.
Impromptu, just keep people like, what happened? Oh, shit, what?
I love that. In fact, what was funny is when I started kicking it off, I was talking much faster than I normally do.
I know, new cadence.
And I was like, what if I keep this up and people think that they're listening to us in double time?
1.5 speed. Well, Lucy the Lender actually hacks. She says she listens to us on like almost double speed. That way she can get through the episodes, primarily the intros, faster. So thank you, Lucy.
Well, I guess we have
to slow down. Just playing. I ain't got time for that shit.
Sometimes you do have to slow down. Like that last episode we did.
Oh my gosh. This was great. It was fine, Dustin. Let her go.
Look, it could have been great. The episode that we did on online networking could have been great, but I think it needed to be 2 hours long.
Ain't nobody got time for that today.
And I got very subconscious while we were recording the episode that it was running too long.
Nope.
And I got very, very self-conscious, not subconscious, self-conscious, that I was overstepping my shminess, my subject matter expertness.
I talk on stuff I have no idea on all the time.
Yeah, I don't like doing that, though,
yeah,
John.
But if you deliver it with impact and veracity, people will believe you.
I'd rather be a little more authentic than that. We're going to put this to bed.
No, you are. This is more for Dustin, not for you guys listening and gals. But go ahead.
The goal of that episode was to inspire people to just want to get off their ass and actually be intentional about networking.
I'm going to look in the camera. I'm going to look in the camera. Please, someone, just message Dustin if you see this, hear this, and be like, hey, man, love that episode 272 about social networking. Please.
Do you really know it's 272? Because you hardly know what episodes we're on.
Well, after you pass the century mark.
So you don't know. You just randomly.
No, 270. This is 274. Shit.
And that one was 272, or is that 273?
I think.
Man, John, you have me all twisted.
I'm a creative. I don't need to be detail-oriented. Look at my desk. That's how we are, man.
Oh, Jesus.
I always have a way because, you know, we creatives, we always have to find a way out.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's actually going to be today's episode.
Oh, my goodness.
So did you walk into this knowing that you had a couple outs?
No.
No.
Or like today, like the office, or like this episode?
In general, in life.
Every day. I have to come up with an excuse every day before I get home because I know I'm about to get yelled at for some shit I ain't do. Why didn't you wash the dishes? Why didn't you put them away? Why didn't you do something? Why not? So then I also think like, all right, what's my rebuttal? It's a constant struggle, Dustin, every day. I'm sure you have the same thing, no?
Why didn't you put the dishes away? I'm curious now.
Because I was running late and I didn't have time for it.
You didn't make time for it.
Are we gonna sit here and argue in the kitchen, or are you gonna let me go to work?
John, I'm pretty sure you kind of roll in and out to work when you feel like it.
Yeah.
So whether it's 10:03 or 9:57, the 6 minutes it would have taken you to do the dishes.
I'm gonna ask you this question because I know. Have you ever been caught behind a school bus on 4:34?
I have been.
Yeah, and you know what that feels like? There's a 4 to 5 minute window at 8:45 in the morning, and you know this. If you leave past 8:55, you might as well just stay home till 10 because of the school bus.
Fair enough.
All right.
And if you weren't sending emails and posting shit online,
right,
then I would think you were sleeping.
Right.
Because you stayed up all night smoking weed and playing video games.
Not all night. Not all night.
All right. But I do like the fact that you have outs. I have an out right now.
What is your out?
Well, if you notice, where's my back facing?
The sun?
No, my back's facing a wall,
right,
that is 6 floors high,
right,
because I trust that nobody's going to come behind me and attack me,
right.
Where are my eyes facing?
The most beautiful person you saw all day, besides your wife and your kids.
Correct. Where else? What else can I see?
Forward, the door, the exit.
The exit, the door. Yes, I'm specifically situated in a spot where I know my out. I can see what's coming at me. I can also see how I'm going to get out of here if I need to. Mm-hmm. Just like in life and just like in business, we must have outs. And what was cool was today's episode, the
premise, inspiration
came from us going through some footage of me teaching a class and getting ready to post it on tloponline.com.
Yeah.
That's our website. Like, our website is chock full.
Hundreds of videos. Of
additional training videos, content, education, links to various other news articles and guidelines and just information. Places that if I were running a mortgage company for a living, I would want all of my loan officers, their realtors, and their buyers to have access to this information all in one place.
If you're an LO and you have a tough question, getting stumped, guess what? We got you served on the online community.
Yes. Yeah. Who? It's the Reddit for mortgage professionals.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what theloanofficerpodcast.com is. It's not a necessarily, oh, that's where they host their podcast. No, that's what YouTube is for. Mm-hmm. That's what Spotify is for. That's what Apple Podcasts is for. That's what Stitcher is for. That's what Google Play is for. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, if you wanted to have one-stop shopping, because that's how John Coleman likes to do it, sure, you can access our current as well as previous episodes through the website. You can access all of our social media handles through the website, but it's actually more there for all of the additional content.
Right.
It's for people who already own homes, want to buy a house, sell homes for a living, finance homes for a living, or just want to learn general shit about personal finance that they normally don't teach in high school.
Word.
Yeah, that's why we did it, right? Mm-hmm. So we were preparing a video because we post three new ones a week, every single week, actually six total. Mm-hmm. Three go up as freemium, that's free. Mm-hmm. Three of them is more of our high level content that we ask people to give us a $25 monthly donation.
Premium.
And then they have access to all of our really good stuff. We give good stuff for free. This podcast is for free.
Yeah.
Right. There's no ads, there's no commercials. Yeah. We anticipate it staying that way. Because we like doing it, because we like to listen to podcasts that aren't chock full of commercials or ads or breaks.
Right.
Okay. The website, we give even more free information. Mm-hmm. But there is some high level stuff that if you want access to it, we figure $25, what is that, like three Starbucks? Anyone can, I mean, $25. I can't even go to lunch anymore for $25.
Right.
Literally, lunch at Bento, when I go get a sushi roll and a side salad and a miso soup is $25.
Right.
So, to us, it's pretty economic. So we're getting ready for that, and there's a clip that you're going to be posting the next week or two, and I think I taught this in a class. I'm like, you must know your outs.
Yeah.
And then I watched that, and I was like, damn, that was good.
Yeah.
And you're like, I know. That's why I'm putting it up on the website. I'm like, no, but we should do like a whole entire episode on that.
And here we are.
So here we are. Like, you start thinking about it, and again, this is one of these episodes that it's just here to make you say, It's just here to give you the encouragement or to give you the thought direction that you need to enrich and better your life, whether it's your personal life, whether it's your business life, or it's a combination of both. In life, especially in business, we must know where our outs are. From a safety standpoint, I know where my outs is based on where I'm sitting. When I go into a movie theater, I know where the exits are. When I get on an airplane, they tell me how to exit safely in case of an emergency. When I go on a cruise ship, you ever been on a cruise before?
Yeah, I love them shits.
You do?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Oh, I love them.
I could see that because you and Murph, you like to do nothing on your time
Where am
off.
I going? I had nothing. I'll just sit there and end up in a new country. Love them.
Okay. Well, then you know what the Mooster Station is.
Yes.
You know that's the drill you have to do within the first 2 hours to get on the boat.
Yep.
Well, you have to know, in case this shit's sinking, how do you safely get to a rescue life raft?
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's life. Well, how do we do this in business? How do we do it proactively instead of reactively? Mm-hmm. How do I use having outs as making a decision? When I learned the word outs, for me, it was a poker term at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had to know when I was playing poker, I didn't know what my outs were.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to be able to like make decisions based on a quickly formulated statistical probability. Right. So, for example, if I have 6, 7, and 8, and I know I need three different cards could make a straight, because a straight is 5 in a row, right? 5 sequential numbers in a row. So if 6, 7, and 8 were already there, then what else could make a straight? Well, 9, 10, which is can make a straight, or 9, 5. Can make a straight. So those are three cards that could make a straight. And I know that we have two more opportunities for any one of those cards to come out. What is that statistical probability? What were my outs? So when John was betting X amount of dollars, and I'm thinking, God, John has me beat. But man, what are my outs? What do I need in order to actually beat John? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I need two of these three cards to come. And I need them to come in the next two cards. A card deck has 52 cards in it. And it has four of the number I need. But I need any two of these three. Then what is my statistical probability? And I may say, well, you know what? There's a 32% chance that two of these cards will come. Or a 16% chance, but I at least knew what my outs were. Right? That's where I learned that term. Now, when I got into the loan origination world and I was pre-qualifying loans, or actually pre-qualified borrowers for loans. I was pre-qualifying borrowers for loans. I had to do a lot of different things. One of those was I had to set proper expectations with the borrower. And second, I had to know what my outs were. And an out to me when I'm a mortgage loan originator, and this is really where the premise of today's show starts, was if the underwriter cuts my income, what's my out? Right? Because if the underwriter cuts my income, my fear is that the borrower doesn't qualify. So to cut my income, do I have an out? And maybe the out was I do, I'm gonna need $8,000 to pay off that credit card. Because when I pay off that credit card, I reduce the, I reduce the borrower's debt load. And now they'll qualify at reduced income if I've reduced their debt, right? It's a tit for tat. So I had to know, can I even get $8,000? Because the borrower showed me their bank statement and they ain't got it.
Mm, true.
So I had to have a conversation with the borrower.
Right. Is that a conversation you want to have up front? Or?
Up front. Okay. Yep. So I had the conversation up front with the borrower. And I just said, hey, John, I'm using X amount of dollars per month to qualify you. I'm pretty confident the underwriter is going to agree with me based on my research. However, if the underwriter doesn't agree with me and they cut your income, because I'm trying to qualify you by averaging your overtime over the past 12 months, and I have good rationale behind it, but they may make me do it for 24 months because that's what the guideline says, then I need to know, do you have the means to pay off this credit card? And you may be like, well, I ain't got the money, but I can go to my dad. I'm like, okay, cool. You'd be willing to do that. Yeah, my dad will give me a gift. He'll pay off that credit card for me. I'm like, perfect. So now I'm setting a proper expectation with you, the borrower, where I'm saying, hey, John, this is not my plan. This is not my goal, but I do have an out. My out would be if under a cut your income, we're just going to have to pay off this Discover card, at which point it means you're going to have to get a gift from your dad. I've already run your scenario through my system, assuming that your income got cut, that you had to get gift funds, that we're now paying off this debt to qualify. Good news is you'll qualify. I just need to know that. I need you to know that's my out. At which point, you'd be like, all right, cool. So I knew structuring the loan, I had an out because this is my reputation on the line. If I gave a pre-approval letter, then I'm putting my stamp of approval, like my expertise, to the seller's agent, to the buyer and the buyer's agent, that I know what I'm doing. Then the buyer and I had a side conversation that, hey, this is how we're looking at your financing. If this happens, I'm predicting this is going to be how I'm going to overcome it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure when people go into battle, they have a plan A and a plan B, right? Nobody wants a plan B. I actually once had someone tell me, I don't need a plan B. A plan B means you're planning to fail. And I respected that thought process. But at the same time, I'm like, I do think we still need a contingency plan. I still think we need to say that we're choosing plan A because our research dictates that this gives us the highest probability of success. Mm-hmm. But if something unforeseen happens and we need to retreat or we need to go a different direction, we need to divert, then this is our plan B, right? Plan B is also knowing your outs. What are my outs? How am I going to get out of this situation if I need to? To use another loan example, I'm going to talk about Bitcoin, right? Just had a borrower wanting to use Bitcoin to qualify.
Got a whole bunch of it.
5 years ago, it was a hell to the no. Can't do it, right? That was like back when Bitcoin was held on like a key fob and you had like some 1700-digit code in order to access it. And that key fob was kept in a safe at your house. Mm-hmm. Well, now we have Coinbase. So with Coinbase, I'm pretty confident that operates a lot more like my E-Trade account, my TD Ameritrade account, than it does a key fob that's held in a safe. So I instruct my borrower, hey, look, go ahead, cash in your Bitcoin, turn it into dollars, and I'll be able to document that you owned the Bitcoin by statements from your Coinbase account. I can see where you converted it into U.S. currency, into U.S. dollars, and then at which point we're going to use that money to qualify. But I said to them, but if for whatever reason, my research is not held by the underwriter to be received or the message had interpreted the same way, I need to know, do we have any other outs? And the person's answer was, well, I've had a conversation with my financial advisor and I have $400,000 in my IRA. And if need be, as long as I get that money back into my IRA within 60 days, I can do so without penalty. Yes, I can pull $100,000 from my IRA, use that for the down payment money, and then I'll just replenish my IRA with my Coinbase account. Again, not what I want to do, Dustin, so I'd prefer you get my loan approved utilizing Bitcoin that's currently sitting in a Coinbase. But for me, that was just me having an out. I knew going into it. So that when I'm teaching younger loan originators how to pre-qualify, eventually pre-approve, and then how to get someone approved, I start with this analogy. Imagine taking a 32-ounce styrofoam cup. You know, the kind that you can only get at like a really dingy gas station on a road trip while driving down 95 in South Carolina, where you just passed not one, not two, but seven dead deer on the side of the road. But you got to pee and your car needs gas, so you pull over. By the way, those are the sweetest tasting drinks come in those types of styrofoam cups.
Boiled peanuts will get you.
Boiled peanuts and the crushed ice, like the Chick-fil-A ice, yeah. Crushed ice. So imagine you fill that cup up with water, and then you just start jabbing holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Hole after hole after hole.
Yep.
This is how I approach every single borrower that I'm trying to qualify for financing. What I'm looking to do is I'm trying to say, hey, best case scenario, this loan is going to be ironclad, and we're going to be able to approve them. What's everything that could go wrong, and how am I going to overcome it? So my analogy of taking that 32-ounce styrofoam cup and poking a hole in it is that's one thing that can go wrong. This is one thing that can go wrong. And then imagine having like the sickest, best putty that all you had to do is put a dab of it on your finger and wipe it across the styrofoam and it fills it. Right? Like that shit that they sell at 2 a.m. Through an infomercial. Right? The stuff that allows you to cut a boat in half.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, but wait, there's more.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah.
One of those products.
Yeah.
Well, that to me is, those are my outs. Hey, I'm going to poke a hole in it. And then how do I overcome? Poke a hole, how do I overcome? Poke a hole, how do I overcome? I always want to have like a trick up my sleeve. I always want to have something in reserve. It's kind of like watching you eat pasta. You always keep a little bit up in your mustache.
right?
You're like, no, I'm just saving that for later in case I get a little bit hungry. Right? Lately, I get a little funk in my mouth and I want to get a better taste. I just lick up there on my little mustache. Hey, you want to save a little bit for later. You want to keep something in reserve. You want to have outs. So that's how it pertains to safety. It's also how it pertains to the mortgage industry. But then I take it one step further. When we talk about outs, I start thinking about mitigating risk. Ooh, what does that mean? Well, every decision I make has a certain level of risk to it. Certain decisions, the risk is so low, the decision requires 3 seconds to make. Certain decisions, it doesn't even require time. It's the subconscious makes it for you because the risk was mitigated in your subconscious. But there's certain decisions you're gonna make in life and more importantly in business that do require you to mitigate risk. My encouragement to all is when you're mitigating risk, what you're really doing is you're coming up with your outs. You're thinking about your plan B. Not that you're planning to fail, just that if something doesn't go your way, how are you going to persevere? How are you going to get to the finish line? And that may be very well continuing. You and I talked about this, John, offline. You continue on the right path, right? You may have known that in order to go from point A to point B, the fastest was a straight line through the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But you started off with a machete and you got one third of the way in the woods and you realize machete's not going to cut it.
Wrong tool.
So you slide back out. It doesn't mean that you all of a sudden start trying to build an airplane to go up and over the woods, right? It doesn't mean that you try to go a different direction around the woods. No, you know that the proper path is from A to B through the woods. What you needed was a chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got your chainsaw and you need to keep moving forward. To me, the chainsaw in this analogy wasn't plan B. Chainsaw was just I failed the first time, my first attempt in learning. Now I know having the proper tool allows me to achieve the goal, and I'm on the right path.
Right.
Right now, so much of that, in that analogy, you could say the chainsaw was your out. Right? You could have said, hey, look, I grabbed a machete because that's what I had. And I'm gonna try to get through it with a machete. But if a machete doesn't work, don't worry. I know I have a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. It's just 2 hours away. And I wasn't willing to wait 2 hours to get myself through these woods. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. That was an out.
How long did you work in the industry, the mortgage industry, before you had to touch the proverbial hot mortgage stove to where you started thinking like this, if that makes sense?
Well, I think in anything, there's this guy out of the Pacific Northwest. His name is Ryan Hills. Shout out to Ryan. He's a content creator. He has this show called, RE Source. Yeah, RE is that? Source. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of Ryan. I don't know Ryan, by the way, but I would love to have him on the show. I just, a dude down in Orlando and a dude up in the Pacific Northwest. I don't know how often we're going to be in like the same town.
Right.
I am heading to Nashville on Saturday.
Halfway?
Yeah, halfway. I don't know if that's halfway either. And I don't know how involved he is in the Mortgage Bankers Association, where like I'm basically all in, big advocate of the MBA. But anyhow, he put some piece of content out there. I listened to him on drive in. I loved it. And I'm going to butcher what he said, and he said it way more eloquently and is well produced, but it was this. You don't learn in good times. You don't learn when things are going your way. You don't learn when things are easy. You learn in bad times. You learn when things didn't go your way. You learn when things are hard. So you want to touch the proverbial hot stove like you asked, because that's how you're going to learn this. When? Right away, probably. Right away. Like when I teach and I preach, and sometimes I know I get on here and I preach and my kids tell me all the time I lecture. But when I do so, it's coming from a place of love and a big heart, but it's also coming from a place of someone who's made way more mistakes than you have. Like that's literally what I try to tell people. Like, look, the only reason why you're listening to me is because I've made more mistakes. Right? I would love to listen to you. I just need you to go out there and make, a couple hundred thousand,
right.
A couple hundred thousand mistakes.
Right.
And when you do, as long as you learn from them, that mistake wasn't wasted. It's when you don't learn from it that it is wasted, or you make an excuse that it wasn't your fault. And I'm like, well, now you got to pick up Jocko's book, Extreme Ownership. It was your fault. Somewhere in there, you could have done something different or better. Don't beat yourself up because you didn't do it different or better because you didn't know any different mm-hmm. or better. But now that you know different or better, then you can find where you can take ownership of why you were a part of why that particular thing didn't go the way that you wanted it to.
Right.
Where were we before? We were talking about we're talking about mitigating risk.
Right.
I'm a big fan of mitigating risk. Like something I would want the audience to be able to just take away from mitigating risk is understand what disaster looks like and then ask yourself if you're okay with that. Right? When I'm mitigating risk or I'm taking big risk, because it is like you got to risk it for the biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
In order to become wildly successful, you must be able to think big and then think bigger. You need to surround yourself with people who do things that you never thought were possible, and then get to know them and realize how ordinary they are. And then ask yourself, why are you not pushing for those same big things? Why? Because you weren't surrounding yourself with people who showed you, yes, you can, and then you weren't thinking big enough.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're making those decisions, taking those risks, you 100% should be mitigating risk. You shouldn't be understanding what your outs are along the way. And one thing that I've always asked myself is, am I willing to lose it all? And what does that look like? What's my worst case scenario? If my worst case scenario is death, I then have to ask myself, what's the probability of death? The probability of death is less than 0.01%. I'm probably going to do it.
I'll get on the ride.
Yeah. If the probability of death is 1% or greater,
I don't know
if I want to take those odds.
Yeah.
Depends on where I am in life. If I'm 84,
let's go.
That's different than 44.
Roll the dice.
If the probability of success is high and the loss is nothing more than time, 3, 6, 9 months, I'm all over it and I'm all in. Right? If the loss is 1 or 2 months salary, yeah, I'm in. Some people, that would make them vomit in their mouth. And my encouragement to those people, even if your salary is 10 grand a month, and your mistake is going to cost you three times that amount. and you're 37 years old, you're 26 years old, you're 47 years old, ask your 65-year-old self if they miss that $30,000.
What $30,000?
Correct. They don't miss it.
Forgot I had that.
You have so much time to make that up. But what you don't have time to make up are opportunities that you squandered, that you didn't take advantage of. So I am a big fan of having outs even for making big decisions, for mitigating your risk, for having a contingency plan. Not that you're planning to fail, right? A contingency plan. But then understanding, what am I risking? Right now, I don't have an opportunity that is valuable enough for me to risk my entire life savings. But if I did, at 44 years old almost, not quite there yet, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, but I will be there. And for some of you who found this episode 3 months after it was dropped, I'm already 44. But I could make an argument that I'd be willing to lose that, because at 44, with my skill set, with my network.
Start over.
Yeah.
Be a pain in the ass, though.
What would I have to do? Well, I might not be able to retire at 55. I may be working until 67 and a half. Right? Okay. Is anyone hurt? Is anyone bleeding? Is anyone dying? If the answer is no, then yeah. But then again, like, what would that have opportunity had to look like? And what was the probability of success? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to tell you, for me, where I am in life, my probability for success would have had to been greater than 90%. And my return on investment would have had to have been something stupid like 20x. Hey, Dio, we have a 95% chance of this working. And when it works, we're going to take that money you gave us and give you 20 times that back. Yeah.
Sign me up.
But I have to be okay with what ultimate failure looks like.
Right.
And that comes along with mitigating risk. And to me, mitigating risk ties hand in hand with knowing your outs. Knowing your outs is very similar when I'm talking big picture. We talk about knowing your outs very minor, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing where the exits are.
Right.
Knowing what happens if the ship starts to sink.
Right.
Knowing how to structure a borrower's loan so that if an underwriter cuts your income or if an underwriter won't let you use the assets, what are you going to do in return, and then properly communicating that? But then now we've parlayed this into big picture stuff. And knowing your outs is also mitigating your risk. And mitigating your risk is me sitting here telling you, John, we got to take more risk. Like, we have to take more risk. We have to be willing to lay it on the line, especially when we know our outs, especially when we're comfortable with knowing what we're going to lose.
Question for you.
Yes.
Can you share a real-world example of when you originated loans, or an example you know of, where you thought the deal was dead, but because you had planned for this contingency, you were able to save the deal and close the loan? Do you have one off the top of your head like that just sticks out?
I'm going to tell one about a loan I lost because another originator outthought me.
Okay.
Right? Had a borrower come to me. This is a very common occurrence. These people are used to being grade A their whole life. Great credit, no debt, high income, money to put down, low LTV, low DTI.
Easy.
Easy loan. Problem is, homeboy just quit his job. Wife quit her job too. They're retired. Difference is, his pension doesn't start for 6 months. And she's not going to start drawing Social Security for 3 years because they don't need the money, because they did a good job of saving money.
Right.
And they came to me and I'm like, y'all have a car lease. Y'all have a current mortgage and you're trying to buy another home. You don't qualify. Your DTI is too high. What do you mean my DTI is too high? I got a $1.2 million in the bank and I got this pension fund. And I'm like, yeah, but your pension doesn't start for 6 months, sir, so I can't use it. And your wife doesn't collect Social Security now, so nothing I could do. I stopped right there. Another lender had told him the same thing, but another lender had a backup plan, had a contingency plan. And that contingency plan was, or her out, so to speak, her out was to ask them to use some of that money they had saved up to buy out their lease. Now, it's one thing to tell someone to pay off a car. But I have learned this about consumers. There's those that lease because they lease for a reason. They like that lifestyle.
The car smells good.
Car smells good. It's always brand new. They only own it for 3 years. They like getting a new car every 3 years. Then there's people like me who I buy something, I hold it forever until that bitch dies.
Yeah.
Right? And then I complain like crazy when I have to go out and buy another car because I hate buying cars. And anyhow, she knew what her out was. And she was willing to put forth the ask. Hey, how much you like this car? You ever thought about just owning it outright? Oh my God, we love the car. Yeah, why don't you reach out to the dealership so you can just buy it from them? But by the way, you can't buy it and go on a car payment. I need you to buy it in cash. And they did it. Now all of a sudden they didn't have that $1,100 lease payment. Now all of a sudden they qualify for a loan. That lady had a contingency plan. She knew if the answer was no with her and with me what the backup plan was.
Right.
I wasn't there yet. But guess what? I learned.
You remember that shit.
I remember that. Yeah. So now every single borrower I've talked to since then, I'll ask them, hey, by the way, do you have someone who'd be willing to co-sign? Hey, by the way, do you have a means to pay off any debt? Hey, by the way, do you have any income that maybe we haven't talked about that if I had more income, I could help you qualify for this home loan or I could help you qualify for a larger purchase price?
Oh, yeah. Why don't you guys? Yeah, sure. Matter of fact.
Yeah, matter of fact. And then we start talking about it. But we have to be willing to ask those questions. We have to be willing to think outside of the box. I mean, the analogy of the solo cup was we have to go through and figure out why something won't work. And then every reason why you find it won't work, you have to patch that hole so that eventually you can thoroughly enjoy that sweet cherry Coke from the fountain with the crushed ice in the solo cup.
Fly floating in the top.
If I'm saying solo cup, I mean styrofoam, not solo. If I'm saying solo, I mean Solo's styrofoam. Solo's a
red cup. You've played flip cup, beer pong, et cetera.
No, I want styrofoam. I love to drink from styrofoam, not solo.
Right.
Yeah. But that's it, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Like, I want to encourage you all to approach life the very basic and the very high level, knowing your outs. Take risk, but make sure when you take the risk, you understand what does disaster look like. And then use that into your formula and be okay with devastation. As long as devastation doesn't hurt you or hurt other people, then you should be okay with it as long as the ROI on the other end is worth it.
Well said.
All right. That's all we want to talk about today, John.
Good job, Dio.
That's all I got to say about that.
Great job, Dio.
I don't know if that's a great job either, but
here we go.
Nonetheless, the purpose of these episodes is to be provocative with thought, to make you say,
entertain, educate,
motivate, and inspire.
There it is.
Yeah, hopefully we did at least one of those, if not two of those.
If you hit all three, it's a great thing. If we had all four, we knocked it out of the park.
And look, they don't talk about this shit at high school.
But they should.
But they should, and which is every reason why we anticipate and expect. And we ask you all, please, share us, like us, comment. If you want to communicate with us, I'm on LinkedIn. My first name's Dustin. My last name's Owen. His name's John Coleman. Don't. You find him on Google. Don't. That is all the time we have for you today, but we look forward to catching you in the next episode. Peace.